The years prior to 1914 saw sixpenny thrillers become current affairs manuals. Parliaments barely knew where secret services ended and oil company activities and munitions marketing began. The war itself raised control of petroleum to high strategy. In 1916, a British raid under Colonel Empire Jack Norton Griffiths crippled the Romanian oil fields before Germans took them in 1917. Berlin's oil-powered submarine warfare threatened vital Allied fuel deliveries, and 1918's last-minute Turkish drive to refuel the Central Powers was too late in capturing Russia's Baku oil fields. Combat did indeed become petroleum-centric in 1917 to 1918, once Allied trucks, tanks, airplanes, and gasoline, 80% of the fuel shipments in this period came from America, replaced wagons, cavalry, and horses. The armistice uncorked both celebrations and further schemes. Allied leaders boasted, in the words of French Premier Georges Clemenceau, that oil is as necessary as blood, or that the Allies floated to victory on a wave of oil, as phrased by a British War Cabinet member, Lord Curzon. However, for foreign offices, chancelleries, and state departments with eyes to read and ears to hear, the revelation of secret Franco-British plans to divide the resources of the Turkish Empire, along with U.S. political schemes in Mexico, another major producer, had their own urgency. The great post-war oil hunt had already begun. The governments of Britain and France, both wed to substantial state ownership and control of strategic oil resources, had colluded in the clandestine Sykes-Picot Agreement of 1916 to carve up the post-war Middle East. France was to get primacy in Syria and Lebanon, while Britain took control of Mesopotamia and Jordan, with Palestine to be under international control. No change was made to London's existing sphere of influence in Persia and the Persian Gulf. Modified in private talks and at a post-war conference in San Remo, the reshuffling also proposed a more or less three-parts British, one-part French split of the oil resources in what became Iraq. To fulfill this arrangement, France got the German quarter share of the old Turkish Petroleum Company, while Britain kept most of the rest. Initially, the United States was to be excluded. The British moved to take charge in the Middle East. In 1918 to 1919, more than 1 million of His Majesty's forces had arrived to make up what became a de facto regional occupation force. Britain and France each dreamed of a Texas on the Tigris, pumping cheap fuel for automobiles, army motorized brigades, and the great battle fleets berthed in Toulon, Portsmouth, and Scapa Flow. As Chapter 7 will detail, there was also a sense on Britain's part, expressed with some candor by Prime Minister David Lloyd George, of returning to the Holy Lands in a modern-day crusader role. Post-war ambitions in London for a global oil coup, projects were also afoot in Latin America, Russia, and the Far East, also encompassed corollary hopes of countering the nascent U.S. challenge to British dominance in international finance. These machinations have been described with great elan and geopolitical detail in the many books dedicated to oil's grand, or not so grand, 20th century saga. In the 1920s, some of the more lurid titles of books on the subject described oil wars between the erstwhile allies. No one can mistake the nationalism and neo-mercantilism of the U.S. State and Commerce Departments during the post-war decade and into the 1930s. In 1921, the British ambassador to the United States, Sir Auckland Geddes, wrote to the Foreign Office about Washington's intentions to treat us as a vassal state so long as our £4.7 billion war debt remains unpaid. On the other hand, in 1919, Sir Edward Edgar, a figure in Royal Dutch Shell's Venezuela operations, had written in a British journal that two-thirds of the improved oil fields of Central and South America were passing into British hands, while the Shell Group was prevailing elsewhere. America before long, contended Edgar, will have to purchase from British companies and to pay for, in dollar currency in progressively increasing proportion, the oil she cannot do without and is no longer able to furnish from her own store.